I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Must Hear Music Podcast. My name is Joe Lynch. I'm sitting here with Jason Lipschitz.
What is up?
Stuff. And Andrew Unterberger.
Can't wait to hear about that stuff.
It's all off the record stuff, So can't really delve into it. Yeah, we got a diverse, certainly cross-generational array of artists we'll be talking about on the podcast today. I'm trying to figure out how this. I think let's start with I think was this your pick, Jason? The Kanye and Lil Pump?
It was not. That was Andrew.
That was Andrew's. Pick, all right. Actually, well, let's start with that. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here.
There's
quite a backstory, really.
So I didn't see Kanye's. Was it a hosting performance last night, or was he was
just the creative director?
He curated the Pornhub Awards.
Pornhub Awards, a site that he's spoken of fondly on numerous occasions. So this came out late last night that he was doing this, and also that there would be a song that would kind of drop as part of it, and it's a collaboration with the SoundCloud favorite rapper Lil Pump, as well as executive producer Spike Jonze and and there was a song and video that released from it called I Love It, not an Icona Pop and Charlie XCX cover.
I know. I was hoping.
Yeah. But what it is a it's a short song. It's a 2 minute song, beginning and ending with a sample from the comedian Amber Givens, and it is Kanye, I guess, getting back to his kind of raunchier roots after a brief dalliance with politics that less spoken about the better. The song, it's interesting. I think a lot of people sort of. Or at least a lot of our coworkers, I think, assumed to dismiss the song outright. And actually, we just had our Friday music meeting, and someone brought up the song, and there was a kind of a loud groan from the room.
Yeah.
But as that groan started to dissipate, you heard these kind of pockets of people being like, "Oh, actually, I kind of like that song." And there were two or three people like that, and I was one of them. I think this is actually I was talking to our coworker Ross about it, and I was saying like, I would not have guessed if you told me at the beginning of the year that Kanye would release a song with Lil Pump as part of the Pornhub Awards with the first line about, can we curse on this podcast? I can't remember.
Yeah.
The first line being Lil Pump going, "You're such a fucking hoe." And it's the most likable thing Kanye West has done all year.
Yeah.
Which
is not saying much, but even still, it's saying something. And it's a short song. It's very to the point. It's got a beat that doesn't try to do too much. And there's even like kind of a weird sort of feminist bent to it. I don't know how consistent he necessarily is with that message throughout the song, but it starts with this Amber Givens sample talking about the female orgasm. And in the video, which I think is a really interesting creative video, they both play these kind of toddler versions of themselves in like David Byrne style, like two big suits. Mm-hmm. They're sort of following along. Amber Givens is very obviously leading them, and then they're kind of acting like children at her feet. And I don't know. This is the version of Kanye that I can still sort of palate a little bit. It's very crude and it's very silly. And I thought he was going too far in this direction a couple years ago, but I guess I didn't realize how grateful I was to have that until he started getting into all these sort of problematic political issues. And this is actually Kanye at his most feminist, I think, which is still not very feminist, but it's closer to a message that I can sort of stomach, and I think the song is actually pretty banging. And being 2 minutes is a huge asset for this song because it couldn't have lasted a second longer and still been tolerable.
I think that's true.
So, Jason, I feel like you're not feeling this one so much.
No, I mean, I don't know. I guess I don't really disagree with anything you said, that it's like definitely more likable than everything else he's done this year, inside and outside of music. But mm-hmm. it's just like, it just bums me out that the bar for Kanye, one of the greatest like hip hop artists of all time, is so low that it's just like, well, at least this song he did with Lil Pump isn't too long. Like that's where we're at. It's like, well, it doesn't outstay its welcome and become intolerable after 2 minutes. Like, I don't know. Like, it's just exhausting. I don't even have like, I don't have the energy to like actively like this. I guess that's where I'm at.
That's fair, and I know you were with me and kind of not necessarily even like being super on board with the Life of Pablo era and like the last couple of years of Kanye. But I think maybe it's that we've all sort of kind of agreed at this point that maybe we shouldn't take everything Kanye says as gospel. The fact that that people aren't, I don't think people are gonna be like putting these like lyrics from a song on T-shirts or like, you know, it's not gonna have the same sort of cultural weight that Kanye of 2016 or 2013 or whatever other Kanye did. That I don't feel the need to naturally recoil from it, because I feel like now we all sort of understand who Kanye is a little bit better.
Look, if there's one thing you know about me and my music taste, is that my number one rule is that I appreciate artists that don't take themselves too seriously. Sure. But I think that this is in the opposite end of the direction where he's just like, oh yeah, creative directive, Pornhub, sure. Little Pump song, I'll call Spike Jonze for the video. Like, it's just like, it's so tiring and it just seems so directionless. And I just don't have the mental capacity to care about this at all.
Joe, where do you fall on this?
I think I'm probably leaning more towards Jason's. I think the song, just taking the song for what it is, it's fine. It's enjoyable. I think you're very right that like it's at 2 minutes, it's like too short to really dislike it.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's like, you mentioned Kanye's feminism, and I think that's like an always complicated, self-conflicting thing where, you know, he has, a woman talking about like the kind of growth in the public discourse about the female orgasm, which is a good thing. But then you have Kanye, you know, basically for his part, he raps about, what was it? I'm a sick fuck. I like a quick fuck. And he says it like 6 times. And it's just like, I'm not, far be it for me to sex shame someone, but like, it's just like TMI. Like, I don't need to know this. And like, there's something like, I guess, disappointing, especially for an artist who, for most of his career, I considered to be one of my contemporary favorites, that like, it seems like his two big talking points, like the things that he loves talking about really for the last 2 years, have been Trump and porn. And again, like I said, you know, I think there's something to be said for like porn positivity in a way that it gets shamed, but like it's pretty disappointing that like those are like, of all the things you could talk about at this point in history, that those are the two things that he's really jazzed about.
I would almost say like I would respect it more if that he did have anything to say, the interesting to say about porn positivity, and he was just like, but you know, if you go back to like, you can literally look at his interest in Pornhub and this collaboration, and then you go back a couple years to what he said about Amber Rose and how he had to take like a week long shower to get her
right.
Like, it's just like there's such grossness and there's such dissonance, and I obviously paraphrase that. I don't. I watched that. Exact quote out of my mind, but I think that
didn't take you a week though.
Yeah, it did not take me a week, but yeah, I just, there's, but that's, I guess that's my point. It's just like, I don't have time for this.
Well, here's my final question about this. If this had been a song by Lil Pump and Tyga, how would you feel about it?
I probably would have liked it more. I mean, that's the thing, is like, it just wouldn't have had the baggage of mm-hmm. being like a Kanye West song with a Spike Jonze video, but you know,
I think that's a fair point, though. Yeah. Although, I don't know if I'd still be like, oh, wow, I'm going to return to this multiple times.
Also, Tyga probably wouldn't take time out of his busy schedule to shame his girl for pretending to like sparkling water over still water.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's true.
We all have our personal passions. All right, well, let's listen to it. Kanye and Lil Pump. Song is called I Love It, not an Iconopop cover.
You're such a fucking hoe, I love it. You're such a fucking hoe, I love it. You're such a fucking hoe, I
love it. Cause your boyfriend is a dork. Make love it. I just pulled up in the ghost. Fuck that bitch up out in London. Then I fucked up on the
car. All right, that was New Kanye and Lil Pump. Let's go. Let's talk about a Kanye West collaborator.
Ooh.
But a radically different song. So we have a new album from Paul McCartney.
Oh,
I could see you were looking at me. You were like, "Where are you going with
this?" Yeah, I did not know.
Yeah.
So new. This is actually a very a Paul heavy podcast. We're gonna talk about the other. Wait, are they? Yeah, they're both in their 70s. The other septuagenarian rocker
must be
Paul Simon later. But yeah. So new Paul McCartney album. It's called Egypt Station. Before I dig into the particular songs that I wanted to highlight, I just want to say I'm a lifelong, I grew up, my dad is a Beatles obsessive and also a solo Paul McCartney obsessive. So I grew up with not just listening to Beatles albums over and over, but the vast majority of the Wings catalog and a lot of the solo records like Flaming Pie and Flowers in the Dirt. So, your parents play things and certain artists you resonate with and you grow up to have part of your, canon of favorites, and other ones you kind of toss off and you're like, oh, that's lame, I hate this. McCartney for me is someone I've, even probably not more than my dad, but I deeply adore. It's not just a nostalgia thing. I think his 21st century output has been really more consistent in a lot of ways than what he was doing in the 70s and 80s. I mean, he did a lot of classics in the 70s, but the Wings output was pretty spotty and quality-wise could be real up and down. I think with the exception of the Kisses on the Bottom, mostly covers album that he did 6 years ago, everything that he's done for the last 20 years has been a real, remarkable, at least 4 out of 5 star type album.
Sure.
And that's wild. You don't usually get people of his age who are delivering that consistently. The Stones just don't make new music anymore. I mean, I know they have a new album that's allegedly been coming out for 3 years. Dylan is on his third Sinatra covers album at this point. There's just not people from his generation. And, the other one we'll get to Paul Simon later. His new album is not really a new album. It's redone versions of old songs. So there's just no one of his age group, no 60s rockers still doing it who are making new music that's still vital and relevant. So in a lot of ways, he's last man standing. So Egypt Station is this very kind of stylistically diverse, weird album, a concept record where he's described it as each song is like a stop at a different train station. The very Paul McCartney approach to an album. It's just so goofy and silly and just, you can't listen to that description without smirking and kind of being oh, Paul.
And it's one of those conceptual descriptions. It's you can try to look for it if you want over the course of the album, but you don't really, it's not really integral to the entire
album. Yeah, it's a very Paul McCartney concept album, much like Sgt. Pepper's, where it's technically a concept record, but that concept is a very slight thing that kind of falls apart halfway through and then gets picked up at the very end. But anyway, so the ones I wanted to talk about is the very last track, which is 3 different songs in 1, which is one of the, Paul McCartney is the best in the genre of medleys, of classic rock medleys. It's Hunt You Down, Naked, and Sea Link. Hunt You Down is this really love. It says what I want my McCartney to be, experimental. It's a kind of a good time, swaggery stomping rocker, but there's these weird electronic bleeps going on. It's a little bit like McCartney 2, his underrated techno album from techno album from 1980. And then it goes into Naked, which is this staccato piano tune, and then it goes into Sea Link, which is this real lazy bluesy number that kind of just the album goes out with a whimper, but in the best possible way. And then the other one I wanted to shout out is Despite Repeated Warnings, which is kind of this similar, a kind of McCartney
symphonic
medley,
yeah.
Symphonic McCartney medley that's, it's one point it's very grand and expansive, and then it goes into these much smaller moments, in vaguely A Day in the Life-ish in that sense. But I feel like I'm just blabbering at this point. What do you think about this, Andrew?
No, I like both these songs a lot. I like the album a lot. I listened to it for the first time this morning. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't like to invoke Band on the Run lightly because there's only one Band on the Run, but it's always great when you can get these kind of Paul McCartney songs that go unexpected places and kind of take these mid-song transitions into entirely new, like weather systems almost. And the Despite Repeat Warning song, like it kind of has a narrative to it. It's this sort of like half Mutiny on the Bounty, half Sleep John B. Like it's fun to follow along with it. So the story kind of gives it a consistent through thread, even as the music kind of shifts dramatically around it. I love that.
Dramatic music. Here. Oh yeah, right? Yeah.
I love when the horns kick in, and then the third part. And I love the first part of the closer with the you know it's got that kind of 70s cowbell groove.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of love like saucy Paul McCartney in general.
Yeah.
Like when he gets a little rockin', when he gets a little frisky with the vocals. You know. The other most notable song on this album is probably the Ryan Tedder collaboration that's been out for a little while and certainly made some waves on the internet. The Fuh You.
Fuh you, yeah. I just wanna fuh you. Yeah.
Yeah. Say a little falsetto there, Joe. Come on.
Yeah.
But that one, you know, some people weren't so thrilled about it because it was a little, you know, a little bit, maybe a little too trying to play with the kids for some people's tastes. But I
thought it was very cheeky and fun.
I love when he just goes for it. I love that he seems to still care. I love that like he's still very clearly making the albums that he wants to make.
Mm-hmm.
At 76 years old. A lot of people 40 years younger than him aren't even doing that. And I love that, you know, he never seemed to lose the love. He still loves music, still loves life, still happy to be the guy who wrote Hey Jude 50 years ago. Like, it's great. Yeah, mission all about the new Paul McCartney album.
Yeah. Do you?
I do agree with that. Look, I'm obviously not like a scholar like you guys are in when it comes to McCartney stuff, but I do think that I agree that you listening to this and even his last couple albums, which I think were a little uneven, you do still feel the passion. Like even doing stuff like the kind, like you made like passing reference to the Kanye stuff, like the fact that he is out here wanting to collaborate with contemporary artists speaks to like the lack of a stodginess that I think it should be appreciated. And look, I don't think like listening to these songs, I don't like think that they're going to like remain, but I do think like he's taking chances with them, and I appreciate that.
I think fair enough. I kind of disagree though about the remain thing. When I was listening to this album, and I'm gonna write something on .com hopefully today. I do think listening to this as a cohesive work, I feel like this will be something that like down the road you will return to in terms of like the McCartney canon, just like, you know, something, an album like Flaming Pie or maybe Flowers in the Dirt they're never going to replace the Beatles, but like as a fan, I still will put those on every now and again. Like I think they're real solid albums. I think this kind of might fall into that category. There's a kind of a ramshackle goofiness to it that I like, but I think that paired with old Paul's like very workhorse like approach to things, which I think is different than young Paul. I think young Paul could be a little lazy when he hit the studio.
A little aloof.
Yeah. Like I think he's very like he shows up, he delivers that song, and you know, he puts on a nearly 3-hour concert. Like I think he's kind of combined his wackier tendencies with a real workhorse like quality in his later years that is very satisfying, I think.
Totally agreed.
All right, well, let's do some of that Mutiny on the HMS Bounty realness. Despite repeated warnings, here it is.
Despite repeated warnings of dangers up ahead, the captain won't be listening to what's been said.
All right, that was a lot about Paul McCartney. Let's do someone not quite as old, Dua Lipa.
I think McCartney's got a couple years on.
He's
Dua Lipa.
A couple years on.
Old soul though, that Dua Lipa.
Yeah, kind of. So wait, before we get to this, is like what? There's like Dua Lipa, Diplo, Silk City. Who else is Mark Ronson.
Yeah, Mark Ronson and Diplo, Silk City is their thing.
Yeah.
So this is like basically the new Silk City song featuring Dua Lipa. It's kind of, for Dua Lipa's purposes, it's kind of her follow-up to the Calvin Harris song One Kiss, which We've talked about, did we talk about, I think we talked about it on this podcast, maybe?
I think we did.
Maybe.
Put it down for maybe.
But basically what Dua Lipa is doing in the interim between albums is hopping on as a featured vocalist with these superstar DJs. And actually, not even between albums, in between first album and repackage of her first album, which is coming in October. But so the song is Electricity, and it's really likable. I think that listening to the song a few times, I don't think it has that immediate hook that One Kiss does, and I think that that is really the biggest knock against it. I think the production is really interesting. The outro is kind of cool. I think Dua handles this song really well. I think it kind of misses that like huge chorus that you kind of need for something like this, but everything else is kind of firing on all cylinders here. I described it yesterday as like a song that plays at a wedding that no one really recognizes, but everybody enjoys and dances to. Like, it's just, and I say that no one recognizes it because it doesn't have that big like uptown funk hook. It doesn't have the One Kiss hook. And it's funny because you know, Dua Lipa's huge breakout New Rules doesn't really have a chorus either. It's more about like the pre-chorus bridge, and then you kind of have like this nonchalant chorus part that's more instrumental than anything. But yeah, I like it. What do you guys think?
Well, I totally agree with your description of like the unknown wedding favorite. I think that's a perfect way to put it. I think the chorus, you know, it isn't an immediate knockout, but it kind of loops at the end a little bit. And by the time the song kind of reaches its close, I'm like it sort of seeps its way in there.
Okay.
I think it's actually like a pretty great chorus by the end. But I totally agree with that. And I think this is just a great mode for Dua Lipa. I think doing.
I know.
I'm a huge early 90s Diva House fan.
Yeah.
Black Box, CC Peniston, Robin S., people like that. She clearly seems to have internalized the lessons from that era pretty well. And I'm just all about the pop stars kind of in these in-between stages, just keeping themselves out there, keeping their songs on the radio, having new songs to play live, having new songs to perform at award shows. It's kind of the Justin Bieber and Rihanna model from a couple of years ago. And I think it's so much fun. And I'm glad that she's out here like this.
You know, one thing I will say about that, and something that I did think about this with this song, is like Dua Lipa like is the it girl right now. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that these people like Mark Ronson, Calvin Harris, Diplo all want to work with her and release their collaborations as like big marquee singles, I think like it shows that she has a lot of cachet right now in the pop world.
Yeah, and it's totally mutually beneficial for all these DJs who need a big name and a big vocal to kind of help sell their songs. It's great for Dua, and it's definitely great for us the radio listeners.
Yeah. So. Joseph?
The radio listeners.
Wedding attendees, the Spotify streamers.
Some of us still listen to the radio, Joe. Yeah, keep that on beat.
Yeah, get my ham radio out. Yeah, no, I like this. I think it has a great, there's like a throwback quality to it. You know, it definitely has like a number of Mark Ronson productions. Like, it has a sheen that is definitely 21st century, but the inspiration is clearly, anything from the sounds of the late 70s to the mid 90s. Sure. And this has a great kind of Studio 54 post-disco dance feel to it. That I dig, and I think she sounds really comfortable with it. And I don't have much to add. I agree that it's kind of like that song that immediately makes you want to dance, even if you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And sure, it doesn't have like the knockout like hook, but I think it's consistently, I don't know, sort of irresistible.
It's engrossing, yeah.
It's engrossing, yeah. So I dig it. And let's listen to it. It's Silk City, which is Mark Ronson and Diplo with Dua Lipa, and is called Electricity.
Falling into you, baby. Even electricity can't compare to what I feel when I'm with you. Oh, baby. Giving up my ghost for you. Now I'm see-through. You give me a feeling, feeling so strong.
All right, that was new Dua. Let's do new Meek Mill and T.I. This is a
back-to-back Jason. Usually you like to space mine out because they're
snake draft style.
They're too hot. My picks, that is.
Yeah.
You really have to space them out in the show.
Yeah, I didn't mean to throw you off there.
So T.I. and Meek Mill released a new single called Hefe, and I really like the song. I listened to it a couple times since it came out, and Andrew, are you shaking your head?
No.
Oh, phew. I want to hear
I'm
your
my
reaction.
Head I'm listening to it in my head already, and I'm
you're bobbing. Yeah,
the sideways bob, as they call it. The main thing here to me that's really interesting, and you know, the song itself is a pretty standard rap collaboration, but T.I. just sounds so ferocious on the song. Like this is the hungriest I've heard T.I. sound in maybe years. Like you don't even really recognize him at first, and obviously he comes second after Meek Mill, and Meek Mill kind of does his thing and he's kind of in standard operating mode, but T.I. just sounds like so like invigorated on the song, and I really appreciated that. Like T.I. Just signed to a new label. He signed to Epic Records. It's funny because I was thinking about how this is right now the 10-year anniversary of the fall that T.I. was just freaking everywhere with Whatever You Like and Live Your Life, sure, with Rihanna. Yeah. Like those songs were just impossible to escape. And you know, obviously I think that's obviously his commercial apex. He's lingered around in different forms and fashions and different projects over the past couple years. But you know, I'm this is like the first T.I. song in a minute that I've been really excited about. So I wanted to throw it out there.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll be honest, I was really surprised like how good it was and how much I enjoyed it. Like the production, I mean, it's just like crazy. Like the Spanish horns like have such
I didn't really talk about the
boisterous
production, but
quality to it. And I think maybe it's just that the music has, it's just so like, it grabs you and it doesn't let up and it just like keeps pushing forward. And it's very, like I said, there's kind of a boisterous quality to it, but it's also very fun. I guess there's swagger. There's a lot of swagger here. And maybe that's why T.I. seems so involved than, you know, he has maybe on other projects in the past. Or maybe it's just, you know, kind of putting that reality TV thing in the past. You know, he's got more focus. I don't know. But
well, he's certainly like an elder statesman in hip hop at this point. And I think
that's so strange, though. When I got the press release about the, I was like, they were calling him like legendary. I was like, he's not been around that long. Like, how
veteran?
Can you be an elder statesman after like basically 10? Like, it seems like
he's been like 17 or 18 years.
We're like preliminarily retiring him at this point. Like, old man T.I.
Old man. Well, you know what? He's had what, probably 13, 14 albums at this point.
Ooh, I don't know if it's that many, but it's a lot. And maybe 13, 14 albums and EPs combined.
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking of like the mixtapes. Yeah. But anyway, what'd you think, Andrew?
Yeah, I've also, I mean, it might say T.I. and Meek Mill on the official credit for this song, but to me, this is a Bangladesh number first and foremost.
Yeah, that's fair.
The producer of Lil Wayne's A Millie and Rihanna's Cockiness and a couple others.
Gucci Mane's Lemonade.
Gucci,
of course.
Really? I should have known that, but I didn't. All right. So yeah, obviously, now if we're talking about legends, I think Bangladesh enters in the discussion before T.I. does. But look.
Wow,
I was not excited to hear this song until I heard the Bangladesh producer ID and like 20 seconds into the track, and then I was like, oh, all right, now we're getting somewhere.
Okay,
and it lives up to it. You know, you guys mentioned the horns; it's a very kind of unexpectedly funky production. I was very into it. I don't remember a ton about the raps; I only listened to it once, but they both sound energized over it. It's an invigorating listen, certainly. I'm about it, and I think. You guys know who does like the little the spoken word intro at the beginning? I think I saw somebody say it was Dave Chappelle. I wouldn't recognize
that. I heard Dave Chappelle too, but maybe a listener can steer us.
Tweet at Billboard, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Yeah, it looks like this will be his 10th album, like 10th proper album. Okay. That is a lot. Yeah. But Elder Statesman, whatever, we're quibbling over semantics.
We also just can't talk about 2008 T.I. this much without mentioning the recently passed 10-year anniversary of the one and only Swagger Like Us.
Yeah, of course.
Which
I was worried you were going to bring that up.
Which included the four biggest rappers in the world at the time,
yep.
Jay-Z, Kanye West, Lil Wayne, and T.I.
Yeah.
He was one of them.
Yeah, he was massive. And I'll never forget that that Grammy's performance with a very, 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 very pregnant M.I.A.
She saved that.
Yeah.
That song is not great, and she made that performance.
She certainly did, although shout out to Lil Wayne's scarf in that performance, which was just a dynamite scarf.
Shout out to Lil Wayne's scarf.
All right. I don't think there's any way to better than
let's
that.
Move on.
So it's Meek Mill, T.I., new song is Hefe, pronounced by Bangladesh.
I say, Dima, little papi, he come with a truck, he gon' make me a tab, and I'm running it up. Gracias. Let me welcome you, get introduced to the king. Bentley, Ferrari, brand new and they clean. So disappointed when niggas on shit on their record. You see them, don't do anything. Okay, killing these niggas with more than before. Been stuntin' the shiners, and back in the 90s. I'm about to forget it, the Glock in my pocket. Remind you, it plugged the whole city behind me. Spent hundreds of thousands, no millions of diamonds in Philly.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, that is new Meek Mill and T.I. We've got, what do we got? A couple things left here. Let's do the other Paul.
Let's do the other Paul.
So we've got Paul Simon, new album, In the Blue Light. It is 10 songs. He's taken 10 deep cuts from his catalog. I'm not as much of a Paul Simon obsessive as I would be McCartney, but I'm pretty familiar with the vast majority of his catalog. When I looked at this track list, I didn't recognize one of the songs. Like, I was like, what? And when I read more about it, I was like, okay, that's on this album that I have and have listened to. And, you know, but they're definitely like, he even describes in the liner notes, he's basically like, these are songs that I thought I didn't get quite right the first time around, and I'm redoing them. The one I picked is from Rhythm of the Saints, which was actually a pretty big-ish deal at the time. It kind of has gotten forgotten. You know, it followed Graceland, which is probably his most acclaimed combination of acclaimed and successful albums. And, you know, it's an all-time classic, like a really just like a flawless work that has aged pretty well, especially, I think, considered to a lot of his 70s classics. Still crazy after all these years. There Goes Rhyme and Simon. Great albums. But the production definitely a little soft rock. That seems maybe a bit too slight to modern listeners. Anyways, I'm really getting off topic. But so the one I picked is from Rhythm of the Saints. It's called Can't Run, But. this one, I really think, so the new version is very cool. So Rhythm of the Saints was a very similar to the world beat influenced Graceland. This included, basically for Graceland, he did a lot of that with South African musicians. Rhythm of the Saints was with a lot of Brazilian musicians. And the original of Can't Run, But it just has a lot of polyrhythms, and it's a fantastic instrumental performance, but the instrumentals totally overwhelm the vocal. And that's not a bad thing. Like, honestly, I think you could make the case that, you know, it was that the kind of Brazilian, the presence of the Brazilian musicians that made that album work, not the lyrics. But, you know, for whatever reason, Paul Simon has decided he wants to redo it. So gone are the Brazilian polyrhythms. And instead we have this kind of like Philip Glass-esque minimalist combination of like very nervous kind of strings that kind of like play all over the place, step on each other's toes.
Love those nervous strings.
Gotta love those nervous strings. Some woodwinds. It's a very sparse production. But very interesting. You know, this is kind of one of the great songwriters of the last half century, recasting his material. He's looking at a song and deciding, oh, you know, instead of this style, what if I put it in this style? And it's, you know, kind of one of those great guessing games that, you know, rock or really any music fans like to play. They're like, oh, what if this person, instead of working with this producer, had worked with this person? And we're kind of getting that here. We're seeing, you know, what if Paul Simon, instead of, you know, using the sounds of Brazil, what if he had done, you know, the minimalist Philip Glass approach? And that's kind of what this song is. What do you think of it?
Yeah, so I had actually never heard this song before. Like, I'm very much just like a greatest hits in Graceland kind of Paul Simon fan, very casual. So I listened to the Rhythm of the Saints version first. I was familiarized myself with it, and I would have sworn that was the modern version. Like, to me, it sounded very like crisp and very like interestingly ornately produced in kind of like a way that would have almost made sense in 2018. Mm-hmm. So I was impressed with that one first of all, but I also liked the re-recording. I thought that, you know, it's a little more stripped down, but it's still, as I said, it's still very busy and it's still very involving. And I don't know, like I'm more just kind of impressed by the song in general, and I want to go back to both versions of it. So before I kind of get the context for the re-recording, I want to go listen to some Rhythm of the Saints and sort of understand where it's coming from a little bit more first.
Yeah, no, that's a really solid album. And yeah. I mean, the first track on it, The Obvious Child, inspiration for the film
song.
Obvious Child, another great, really fascinating rhythmic song. Yeah, it's just cool. I think that's the nice thing about this album is just that it's kind of like, it's fun, new Paul Simon, and simultaneously you're like, oh, I should like go and back and revisit some of these other ones.
Yeah, buried treasures catalog. there from Ryman Simon.
Has he said that this is his last album? It's not, right?
Sort of. He said that he's retiring from touring
right
after this month, and he said that he's basically not, he hasn't written a new song in 2 years, he just doesn't feel like it. He's not said like, I will never make an album again, but he said, you know, I think he's at this point 76, and he said, I just want to, you know, tour the world, and I want to ponder the mysteries of life. I have no interest
it's a full-time
in
job
returning to
the
studio anytime soon. So it's kind of a soft close. And there is something very strange about, you know, like making your last album just like kind of re-recordings of old stuff. It's an odd move.
Sorry, I know I've been given a lot of shout outs already, but I got to give one more to my guy, the third Paul, to release an album this Friday. Paul Carrack, silent Hot 100 legend, vocalist on a number of hits of the 70s and 80s for other bands. Ace, Squeezes, Tempted, Mike and the Mechanics, The Living Years, Hot 100 number one. He released a new album called These Days today.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
There's three
Pauls.
Three rock Pauls?
Three rock Pauls. Arguably the three greatest rock Pauls, you know.
That is wild. I did not know that. That's crazy.
And yeah, I recommend the first track, Amazing. It's a nice, smooth kind of 80s yacht rock sort of thing. If that's your bag, and I know it is sort of for you, Joe,
yeah.
I can't recommend it highly enough.
Man, I'm thrilled that there are three classic rock Pauls releasing an album. Where are you at, Anka?
Yeah, really. Step up here.
All right. Well, let's listen to it. It's Can't Run But from Paul Simon's new album.
I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run but. I can't run, but I can walk much faster than this. Can't run but. A cooling system burns out in the Ukraine. Trees and umbrellas protect us from the new rain.
All right, next and last, Lauren Daigle. This is an Andrew pick. Song is called Look Up, Child. And take it away.
Yeah, so I think you guys both know that I'm very diligent New Music Friday listener.
Yes.
And one of the always interesting parts of the New Music Friday experience to me is when you get about 70% in and the contemporary Christian songs start.
Yeah.
You usually get two or three a playlist. They usually, you know, the artists usually have like Worship in the Name or mm-hmm. United or
Hillsong, one of the various Hillsong iterations.
Often Hillsong related. Sometimes they have Oceans in there, whatever. But they seem to be kind of bubbling up in the mainstream space in the last year or two in a way that they haven't, you know, in a while, since the 90s, I think.
Shout out Amy Grant.
Sure. And I would say the kind of the leading light of this movement is this artist named Lauren Daigle, who I think had some success on the Christian charts for the last half decade or so. Has been on songs with other Christian stars of various renown, but she had a song a couple of months ago called "You Say," which it sounds very much kind of like an Adele ballad, like sort of the piano intro is very much like "Someone Like You." But obviously, it's about, you know, it's about God or and Jesus rather than a sort of a romantic love.
Yep.
And it had kind of an unprecedented, you know, commercial bow. I think it was like, it might have been the top selling song of the week. It debuted in the 50s on the Hot 100, and it's actually still lingering there now. She's actually having a pretty pronounced success with it. And then today, I think her album finally came out, and it's also called Look Up Child. And this song, I think, was actually like the fifth or sixth song on the New Music Friday playlist. So really making her way up in the world, Lauren Daigle. And again, it's very Adele. Like the first when it came on my
Super
playlist, I thought like no, she can't possibly have a new song. I would have heard about this weeks ago. But it, you know, it sounds more like Adele circa Semi Love to Your New Lover, and you know, it's a little it's got more of a bounce to it. It's more of a pop song that you might actually hear on the radio. And I'm just fascinated to see where she goes from here. I think she's a very strong vocalist. Obviously, she's a pretty smart songwriter. Seems to be working with the right people, and it'll be interesting to see if she can kind of have like that sort of Amy Grant style crossover success.
Yeah, I feel like she really could. I mean, I'm just by virtue of working here and working with writers who specialize in Christian music, I've been aware of her for a few years. Certainly, if that had not been the case, I don't think I would have, because her name really has just been bubbling into the mainstream recently. But yeah, I mean, it's, you could easily, and I did, listen to the song and not realize that there's a Christian element to it at all. I mean, I'm assuming the child in question is the Holy Child.
Well, I think it's more that you're supposed to look up to the heavens, you know, for guidance.
Oh, you're the child looking up.
When you're down and in trouble, sort of thing.
Well, so the whole, like, child thing, that's a little religious.
And if you read the lyrics on paper, it's pretty obvious that it's religious themed to both this and You Say, and I'm sure any number of other songs. But yeah, when you're listening to it, it would take, you have to really be concentrating to sort of be able to tell the difference between this and any number of top 40 hits.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very soulful, impressive vocal. Mm-hmm. The song is pretty flawlessly constructed. I really liked it. I have to say it made me think maybe I'm a Lauren Daigle fan.
Yeah, it made you a believer, as it were. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I really enjoyed this song.
Yeah.
You know, like you say, you mentioned Adele, like it has that kind of same type of balladry, and she, her vocals are really impressive. I don't really have much to add. I just like, I definitely enjoyed it. It's like an adult contemporary with a little side of Christianity.
Well, it's also just interesting because while Adele's gone, there's really nobody else to take her place. Like there's no like second place Adele to kind of take the audience that would be wanting a 28 or 29 or whatever number we're up to at this point. So it's really
right. Sort of Sam Smith.
But you know, he's sort of on the wane rather than on the rise. And it seems like, well, sorry, Sam Smith, I like your new song with Calvin Harris, but
it's good. Yeah, Promises is really good.
But like it does seem like there is a market for the taking for an artist like Lauren Daigle, and it'll be interesting to see how far she continues to rise to that.
Yeah, and I mean, Christian artists do sell a lot. I feel like it's an under kind of known genre. That's maybe a weird way to put it. It doesn't get a lot
of... It's an underserved genre.
Yeah, it's underserved genre. People do buy it. You know, whenever Lecrae puts out an album, it tends to top the Hot 100, or not the Hot 100, the Billboard 200.
Yep.
And there's always in media this collective, like, who is Lecrae? What's going on? But it's like, but people listen to this, and people love this stuff, and I think it just doesn't get the same media looks that probably are deserved based on the listenership. This is great, and I like that we began the podcast talking about porn, and now we're finishing it speaking about a Christian-leaning track.
The duality of man here on
Exactly. We started out with a Saturday night, did those Saturday night tequila shots, and now we're doing the next morning repentance. All right, well, let's listen to it. It's Lauren Daigle. The song is called Look Up Child.
Where are you now when darkness seems to win? Where are you now when the world is crumbling? Oh, I hear you say, I hear you say, look up, child.
All right, that was what we got. That was a weird mix of stuff.
Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah,
I would say that the Lauren Daigle and the T.I. Meek Mill song Hefe have a lot in common.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You just got to kind of look beyond the surface.
Yeah,
there.
Come on. Anyway,
all right.
That was a fun one.
I could see, well, whatever. Yeah. I feel like she, like, honestly, though, like, put, give her, like, she needs, like, a duet or, like, a feature with a rapper, and then that's going to be her, like, well,
maybe the next time a Dua Lipa isn't available, like, the big
yes.
British
yeah,
DJs are
yeah, let's go.
Daniel,
yes,
you know, exactly. Really rise up here.
Yeah. I mean, there's a big history, or, yeah, of, like, yeah. dance producers tapping gospel vocalists. I mean, that could be, I know she's not gospel, yeah. but, you know, it's a similarity.
Hit us up, Mark Ronson. We can make it happen.
Yeah. yeah. All right. Anyways, thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with whatever's out next week. I forgot.
Yeah, we got some cool fall stuff coming up. I'm not sure exactly next week, but yeah, got some big...
No more Pauls, though. I think we're out of
no more Pauls. Probably no one over 70, yeah. but promise, no promises.
Never know.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Andrew, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
And Jason, thanks as always.
Yeah, of course,
and
man.
We'll catch y'all next time.
All right.